Welcome to the third edition of the new and improved EuroHoopPod, Europe's official podcast. This is Antonis Strogilakis with my great colleague Cesare Milanti. Hello, Cesare.
Hello. And hello, everybody.
Hello, Cesare and Cesare Milanti, who has injuries of war, I think, right now. Because, come on, man. You know, how did this happen? Tell us, please.
So I made the big mistake of not playing basketball for once, but playing football.
For same.
As soon as I play football, I break my left hand thumb. So yeah, it is what it is.
This is what happens when you don't stick to basketball. I'm joking, of course. Take care, man, and I hope you rehabilitate your hand quickly. Now, Cesare, usually we would begin this show by talking about the upcoming double game week, the many interesting games that we will see starting from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But as I actually saw on the Facebook wall of our man in charge, our chief editor, Aris Barkas, he posted the picture. There's the picture that says that the NBA has gone days since being unnecessarily dramatic, and he changed the NBA with EuroLeague and changed the days with hours because of what happened on Saturday. You know, the weekend begins and you would think, oh, how nice weekend, the EuroLeague week is over, we will have a nice calm set of days, being busy just with the domestic league action ahead of the hot double game week. And then, boom, an interview is published of Milano coach Ettore Messina. And, he says a lot of interesting things in the interview. I would say the interview is published in two separate outlets, right, Cesare?
Yeah, two separate Italian newspapers. One is Il Foglio and the other one is Corriere della Sera.
And among all the other things that the veteran coach, the four-time EuroLeague champion, says is at the beginning of the season, there's an original seed. We haven't had the right driver for our car. Kevin Pangos isn't the right man to lead this team, and I still haven't found the right adjustments to simplify our style of play. Okay, that's one thing, throwing your playmaker under the bus in a way. But the other thing that received a lot of criticism, we'll talk about it. You know, Mike James made an abundance of tweets about it. But the thing is that Messina is at least reported to comment on Sebastian Napier. A reminder, Napier joined Milano last season, and after he joined the team, he completely transformed the team. Milano, that was struggling, began getting wins. He was playing great, and this summer Napier didn't continue with Milano, which was a bit surprising, but signed with Cervena Zvezda. And Messina is reported, and I will say what I mean by reported to have said. He said that Napier is sending private messages to his former teammates saying he wants to come back. He changed the personality of his team. Wow. And then what happens, of course, Sebas Napier reacts naturally. Stop lying to your fans. He writes about Messina.
Yeah.
He says, I get it, your team didn't start the way you'd like, and neither have I, because Napier isn't playing that great with Cervena Zvezda, but stop using me as a reason. I'm dealing with my own difficulties at the moment, but I'm happy with Red Star, and I will be better for them. Two statements about a player that's no longer a part of the team. Just let it go. Stop lying to your fans to fix your troubled ways, Napier comments. This creates a series of reactions. And then Ettore Messina, there's a statement that's published on Olympia Milano's website, and I read it regarding a statement attributed to me this morning by an Italian newspaper and then taken up by numerous websites. I would like to point out that speaking about Sebas Napier in front of some journalists and the reasons for his departure from Milan, I have never said or hypothesized that the boy has expressed to any his desire to return to Olympia. It was purely a journalist's interpretation. I have the utmost respect for Napier and for Cervena Zvezda, and as a principal, We never talk about players from other teams. The damage was already done, of course, Cesare.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about this? Crazy.
It's a whole messy situation. First of all, we have to take out from the double interview, as we can say, that on Il Foglio, it was actually reported as a quote, the thing that Napier is writing, is texting private messages to his former teammates saying, I want to come back and stuff like that. On Corriere della Sera, it wasn't reported as a quote. Actually, we can't find anything like that on Corriere della Sera. So
About Napier specifically.
So one journal decided to publish that, one journal decided to not publish it. So it's a very tricky situation and we actually don't know what's the truth behind it. I think that's kind of probably some kind of confession that Messina did or that Messina made or whatever, or some kind of assumptions. And to be honest, first of all, I don't know the truth. So it's just my opinion, my honest opinion.
I don't want to describe it and characterize it as interview exactly because we don't know the rules under which the conversation took place.
Exactly. We don't know the setting, we don't know the location, whatever. But I don't think that Napier is actually that desperate to come back to Milano. At the end of the day, of course, it was his first, considering the injury he got in St. Petersburg. In Milano, we can say that it was his first overseas experience. He debuted in the EuroLeague. He had great games. I remember the one against Fenerbahce on the road. So he was a standout player for Milano last season. But at the end of the day, he decided to take a new step in Belgrade. And of course, things are not working as he wanted right now. But
it's not like he's playing bad. But he's not as efficient as he would like to be.
Yeah,
not as efficient as last season. And Cervena Zvezda doesn't get many wins. They are 2-5 right now. Continue, please.
Yeah, and as I was saying, I don't think Napier is that desperate to come back. And actually, the real quote that was reported in both journals, the one about Kevin Pangos, is the one that annoys me the most. Because at the end of the day, even though Pangos is currently out of the team, basically is out of the project, is not playing both in the domestic league and in the EuroLeague, is not even at the arena when the games are played. So it's basically out of Milano. It's still under contact with you and is still an old EuroLeague playmaker. We don't forget about the seasons he had in Žalgiris, in Zenit St. Petersburg, even some moments in Barcelona despite the injuries he got. So it's not like we're talking about the newcomer who's struggling at the beginning of the season. We're talking about an experienced point guard. And especially the thing he said about Cleveland, it's kind of annoying in my eyes because it's not really like he went out of the team from starting from being the second playmaker of the team. Like, we know how the NBA works with players who most played in the EuroLeague. We're seeing what is happening right now with Zenkov, with Micic. Right now, Micic, we can say, is not part of the project in Oklahoma, but that doesn't mean that Micic is not. So I think communication-wise, since we are judging that, it's kind of a nightmare because it's problematic on different sides. I don't know actually what will happen in Milano. I know that Milano has some real problems and the win against Valencia, 31-point win against Alex Mumbrú teams, doesn't solve that because Valencia at the end of the day didn't have Touré, which is the backup center for Davis, and Davis had some struggles with that. Especially Valencia didn't have Chris Jones, which is the leader of the team in terms of scoring, like scoring wise, assisting in teammates, and also Stevan Jovic only played 4 minutes for intestinal virus. So Milano won, of course, great atmosphere in Forum last week, but then they went on the road to Scafati in domestic league action, and they lost against a team which doesn't have the ability to fight to enter in the playoffs in Italy. And especially they lost against Alessandro Gentile, which was kind of interesting because, of course, we remember Gentile, the captain from that 2014 team with Luca Bacchi. And it was curious to see him basically
eventually Alessandro Gentile became a kind of a black sheep for Milano in the beginning. Yeah. This was the guy that he would lead Milano in the future.
Yeah.
But things turned out to be the complete opposite. Now, you said about Scafati that they won't be fighting for the playoffs in Italy, but the funny thing is that right now Scafati has the same record as Milano in Italy. They are both at 4-3 after this result, of course. And in EuroLeague, the win against Valencia that you mentioned was just the second for Milano over 7 games. They are definitely underperforming. They are not playing quality kind of basketball that you would have believed they would play regarding the roster they have. The changes they made during the summer, I mean, they signed Nikola Mirotic. The Nikola Mirotic saga ended with Milano being the winner, beating Partizan, Olympiakos, and Cervena Zvezda, and all other teams that were out to grab the 2022 EuroLeague MVP. I don't even have to mention the rest of Milano's roster and how many great players.
Actually, since you touched on Milano roster, that's also a problem. Like, since the loss, I remember actually the team, but Milano lost at home recently a game in the domestic league. And after that game, Messina said, I can't really rely on the players who come off the bench. So he decided to give a lot of minutes to Melli, to Mirotic, to Alex Poitras, several pieces who are important for Milano in the EuroLeague because they are the players who needs to play in the EuroLeague. He didn't give any minutes to Guglielmo Caruso. He gave only 7 minutes, if I remember correctly, to Giordano Bortolani, 4 minutes to Gianpaolo Ricci. And these players can easily beat, you know, in a well-oriented team at least, can easily beat guys like Pini or the guys that play in Scafati right now, with all due respect to Pino Sacripanti's team. So that's also a problem. You know, we are at the beginning of the season. It's only the beginning of November and you can't rely on Italian players in the domestic league action. That's a problem.
The rotation, it's very curious, the rotation they had against Scafati. As you said, I see Mirotic playing 30 minutes again. And for God's sake, if you put your star player, Nikola Mirotic, playing 30 minutes in domestic league game ahead of the double game week, while you have other players who are at least supposed to assume an important role in this kind of games and let Mirotic, you know, get some rest at the bench. You have Savon Shields, your unofficial second in command this season, essentially.
Yeah, you can say
28 minutes. Nicolò Melli, 26 minutes. Alex Poitras, 26 minutes. These are a lot of minutes. I mean, you have to make some rotation because a double game week is coming. And Milano has difficult games to play. They play against Virtus on the road. And Virtus, at this moment, they look to be 2 or 3 levels above Milano in terms of the basketball that they play. And then they host Anadolu Efes. And Anadolu Efes, we have talked about this team in previous podcasts. They are not performing very well as well, but they seem to be improving game by game. They seem to be doing things better, and Milano doesn't seem to improve. At least they don't improve on a consistent level. They don't show consistency. I don't know what do you think about this upcoming weekend, Milano? Because right now, Milano is close to the edge, I like to think. I know that the Milano management has 100% trust on Ettore Messina.
Yes.
Who, for those who don't know, is also president of the basketball operations. So essentially, he's the boss of the team when it comes to the basketball department and the decision-making. But they travel to Virtus, and this is a special kind of game. And Virtus, they play at home. They're in a much better situation right now. And then they face Efes. In the hypothetical scenario that Milano loses both of these games, do you see, and in the aftermath of what is happening with Messina, that right now is also losing the communication war because he doesn't give really convincing answers on his players, on his roster. He receives a lot of criticism by the Italian media.
Yeah.
Do you think that we may expect radical changes from Milan? By radical measures, I mean Messina possibly resigning from the team.
To be honest, I don't see that happening because at the end of the day, even last season, Milano had some real problems. They went on a several game losing streak in the EuroLeague, and things didn't change until the arrival of Shabazz Napier in Milano. I don't see anything change, to be honest, especially for what you said about Messina. Basically, Messina has this double role with like the president of basketball operation and the head coach. And in that interview, he said, "I'm the one choosing the players." So basically, he's also doing like some kind of general manager duties. So yeah, like I don't see the situation changing in Milano. In my eyes, the ideal scenario would be ending the season like this, whatever the result is, and then starting a whole new project, possibly with Andrea Trinchieri on board, who's still a free agent. But yeah, we will see what happens with Milano. Talking about Virtus, since you mentioned it, they won against Treviso at home. Treviso is in a very difficult and bad situation at the moment. But yeah, Virtus made a statement, a big statement. We can say a similar thing about Mirotić with Şengelya, because Şengelya also played tons of minutes, but unlike Mirotić, he was essential in the win of Virtus. He had another double-double. He was once again the MVP of the game. He had one of the best games in terms of efficiency since joining Virtus. And Virtus is struggling with the center position because Dunston was sidelined because, of course, Banky needs him to rest, at least in domestic league action. But Miki ended the game earlier than expected for an ankle problem, and medical checks are ongoing right now for Virtus. And especially Devonte Kekoc isn't delivering. Like, he had the opportunity of playing tons of minutes against Treviso, against players like Gora Camara and Pauli Polikap, which are not like high-level centers in Europe. And he went out from the game early in the first quarter after committing three fouls in just a matter of minutes. So you can see that he's dealing with some difficulties in terms of, you know, the how he's dealing with the fouls, you know. But yeah, Virtus is in a way better moment at the moment.
Yeah, and to close this discussion about Milano and the Ettore Messina, we saw, of course, one player reacting in particular, and that was Mike James. He made a series of tweets criticizing his, I wouldn't say his former coach, he would become his former coach, Messina, but the summer that Messina arrived at Milano, he decided that Mike James is not to be included on the plans of the team. And Mike James remembered that, of course. Yeah. And he didn't hold anything back. He said that Messina threw me into space or something like that. I have to find the exact quote he threw.
Into the ocean, like, into the ocean, maybe.
Into the like ocean, that. Yeah. Because he didn't exactly comment on the so much on the Napier thing, but he commented on the Pangos thing.
Yes.
And the fact that Messina openly criticized his player. Yeah, Mike James said he threw Pangos in the ocean and he threw me in the outer space. So it was like it was worse for him. He threw him in even further, and he commented that saying blaming a PG Pangos that's been all EuroLeague and showed high level performance. 5 games into the season, not looking to a mirror and needing to put together a terribly constructed roster. I'll give that to Mike James. I don't feel that, yes, Messina has said time and again that I make the decisions, etc. But I don't get so much accountability for his mistakes, and especially the way he manages his roster and uses his roster. I don't really get so much accountability from him that I'd like to see from a coach of his caliber. Then I also have to say that Mike James looked like he was looking for this opportunity to respond back to Messina.
Probably,
I got something like that from his comments, because then he went from He also engaged in discussion with fans. Some fans were telling him that, wow, you're so disrespectful. This is a guy who is a living history of EuroLeague basketball. It was 4 EuroLeague titles, and you don't have EuroLeague titles and win a EuroLeague and then talk, etc. I won't be saying that, but then he used some harsh words, I believe. He said that Messina is a dinosaur and that he's lost it, regardless if there is any truth to the meaning of he lost it. For example, that he doesn't control the team or he doesn't have ways to improve the team.
Yeah.
I like to think that maybe James could have used better words to say what he wanted
yeah,
to say
sure. Yeah,
at
for
that
sure.
Moment.
For sure.
Anyway, let's move on from this. Speaking of, you talked about Sengelia, and Sengelia had this, he was the October MVP in EuroLeague. If I ask you, If right now, let's say you would pick the guy who is the front runner for MVP, which player would you choose?
I think I will go for Mike James.
You will go for Mike James and not Toko Sengelia, okay?
I would go for Mike because I see Monaco being more consistent than Virtus on a long run.
All right. Ah, so you're taking into account the future and what might happen in
the
future.
Yeah. Oh, at the moment, you mean? Oh, at the moment? At the moment, I will probably go for Toko. Yeah, sure.
Okay, at the moment, we have Toko. The first MVP ladder of the season is going to be published, regarding when the podcast will be live also. maybe the EuroLeague MVP ladder is already published, or maybe it hasn't been published yet. But anyway, the EuroLeague MVP ladder is published Tuesday on EuroLeague.net. I can drop the five names that I chose to put on the first MVP ladder of the season. It's Mike James, of course. It's Toko Sengelia. It's Facu Campazzo, who the main guy behind Real Madrid right now, the undefeated Real Madrid overall competitions, including EuroLeague. There is Lorenzo Brown from Maccabi Tel Aviv. I just had to put a player from Maccabi, and Lorenzo has been carrying the team on his shoulders. Essentially,
agree.
Considering also that Wade Baldwin missed the start of the season. And I just had to put a Barcelona player. Barcelona players may not have this kind of impressive numbers that Toko has, that Mike James has, that Lorenzo Brown has, but I had to put a player, and I picked Nicola Laprovittola because he's leading the team in assists. He's playing great. He missed two games, but the thing is that he had two super performances on the road against Olympiacos and Partizan. He was by far the best player of his team in these crucial victories. And in the two games he missed, this is essential for me to when you have to talk about who is the MVP and who is not the MVP, you also have to look what the team does without said player. And Laprovittola missed two games. He missed the game against Panathinaikos, and he also missed the game against Real Madrid. And Barcelona has the worst offensive performance this season in this game, and their only loss in this game without Laprovittola. I don't think this is a coincidence.
No.
I don't know. And I don't know if you agree with my other picks as well.
I totally agree with your picks. Lorenzo Brown, as you said, is carrying Maccabi through this very difficult situation, of course. Toko Sengelia had an amazing start for Virtus, and we can, as I said previously on Europe, on the podcast, he's playing probably his best basketball overall in his career, to be honest, in my eyes.
Yeah, definitely. It's comparable to the things he was doing with Baskonia.
Yeah.
And we have also to see his endurance during the season, his consistency, because it's early. And I'd like to see, you know, Toko having a full season. I don't think that he will have, if he has the same numbers for the whole season, then he will be MVP of the year. Virtus might go to the Final Four.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like Chima said.
Yeah, but this is all EuroLeague for now, at least. And this is comparable with Baskonia. He didn't have this kind of impressive number with Baskonia, but it's still early. His numbers are insane so far.
Yeah, it's early to judge, but as you said, right now is been amazing for Virtus. As I said, Mike James, great start for him. You can see that his all about confidence right now at the moment, and also the relationship with Sasha Obradovic is getting better and better. And about La Provitola, I also agree with you. Like, he's probably being one of the best players on Barcelona's roster. And when he was out, you could have seen that. Like, he's essential for Roger Grimau's team with the style of play that the Catalan coach has imported. He needs to have Nicolas La Provitola on his side. And with a different record in the Basque country, maybe we could have also inserted in that either Chima Moneke or Tadas Sedekerkis, because they're both playing amazingly.
Yeah, the only reason, of course, that I didn't put Chima Moneke, for example, and of course, the reason I didn't put Nikola Mirotic, who's having a fantastic number. He's the leading scorer in EuroLeague right now. He's scoring, averaging almost 2 more points than Mike James, which is a lot when we're talking about averages.
Yeah.
But the rule is that I can't put a team that doesn't have a winning record.
Sure.
Baskonia right now, they are 3-4 after that big win over Olympiacos. And I have to admit at this moment that I wasn't betting on Baskonia getting that victory, but Chima and the rest of the guys proved me wrong.
Yeah.
Or if you will, Olympiacos also proved me wrong, because if you told me before the game that Olympiacos would trail by 16, 18 points at some moment, I would laugh out loud. But this is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And they came back, of course, but it wasn't enough. And Milano is 2-5. So this is where I said the difference. If for a player to be put on the MVP ladder, the team has to have a winning record. The reason I didn't put a Valencia player is they don't have the kind of a player who's playing MVP basketball. They have many different contributors, and they are relying on defense to get their games,
yes,
to get their wins. Sorry, so there wasn't any player to pick. This is the same reason why there wasn't any Fenerbahce player on the list. They have many players contributing. There is a balanced performances. There are some names who could perhaps make a case for being on the MVP ladder, but they aren't. They don't have better numbers than the players that made the list, while their teams have a winning record. Now, when it comes to the ranking, the overall ranking, well, wait and see. I don't want to spoil the list completely, but I will tell you this, that I don't think there are many surprises on the first MVP ladder. I think maybe some people will make funny faces when they see Nicola La Provitola and not Chima Moneke because of numbers. But again, I say it's important to consider teams that have a winning record, because at the end of the day, and when all is said and done, if a player's team doesn't make the final four, then the player
doesn't have the MVP.
Any chances. Yeah, you don't have the MVP. Your team makes the final four, you have your chances to be named MVP. If you have the best numbers in EuroLeague by far, if you, I don't know how much you average, at least as EuroLeague it is now, you won't be named MVP.
Yeah, I agree.
So we'll see. It's still early, but so far I believe that these are the players that are ahead in the MVP race, also considering their team's records and performances. Now, let's move to speaking of rankings and ratings. Yeah. Before the season began, Cesare, you published a story on Eurohoops, and you had the top 10 NBA players entering the EuroLeague season.
Yes,
and it's a bit ironic, and not in a good way, that the first player that you had on this list was Raul Neto. Raul Neto is done for the season.
Yeah,
and God knows how better would Fenerbahce likely be with Neto on board. I really think that he would be someone who would make a huge difference for Fener. I know that Fener right now is 5-2. They are 5-2 after losing a very close game in Belgrade against Partizan, despite missing so many key players. Fenerbahce is really strong this season, and I think that with Neto, they would, I don't know, maybe they would have been undefeated, they would have
yeah, you could you can also you can also say at the end of the day that probably with NATO you wouldn't have seen this kind of Nick Calates. So
for sure, for sure.
That's kind of tricky,
I,
you know.
I still think that NATO would make a huge I believe that I just believe that his game is a perfect fit for European basketball.
Yeah.
And FIBA basketball in general, because okay, he played many years in the NBA, and someone might say that he should have taken his time to adjust to EuroLeague, but I think he would fit like a glove to
I can agree with you.
To Fenerbahce system, you also included Frank Jackson, you included Sterling Brown, William and Gomez, the Hernan Gomez brothers, William and Wanto, PJ Dozier, Jabari Parker, Serge Ibaka, Frank Kaminsky, and last but definitely not least,
Kemba
Walker of Monaco.
Yeah.
So far, after seven rounds into the EuroLeague regular season, if I had to ask you, the player who has adjusted better among all these, and I would like to put an asterisk next to Willy and Wanto, because these are two players that. And maybe Serge Ibaka, because these two players, you know, it's not like they're inexperienced in FIBA basketball. And Willy played in EuroLeague before. It's not like he's a EuroLeague rookie. He knows what EuroLeague is about. So when it comes to grading their adjustments, it's not the same to evaluate Willy, how well Willy has adjusted in comparison with Frank Kaminsky, for example. I'm thinking about the guy in his position. So if I have to ask you, which player has adjusted better so far? Who would you pick?
To be honest, I think it's a close race between Jabari Parker and Frank Kaminsky, in my eyes. Because Frank Kaminsky is getting better and better, and we know that Željko Obradović's system is very strict, in which you have to follow certain kind of rules. But I do believe he's going to be dominant in the long run during the season, especially for the type of modern center that he is. You know, I can see him fitting perfectly with the EuroLeague, and also replacing a monster like Matthias Lesort wasn't going to be a easy task, but he's been delivering. We've seen that in the game against Fenerbahce. So I'm pretty happy about the start that Kaminsky had, but I'm surely happier about what Jabari is providing. We're seeing that, like, even though we were kind of skeptical about his addition at the beginning of the season,
Jabari, I think.
Yeah, but he's proving that, you know, he's doing the correct things. He's not you know, annoyed when he's on the bench, and when he's on the floor, he's providing for Roger Grimau's team. Is providing highlight reel kind of plays, but at the end of the day, he's also doing the little things. And we are kind of seeing the Jabari Parker before the injuries in the NBA in terms of the facilitator that he is and the kind of offensive force that he is. So I would choose probably Jabari at the moment. I'm very disappointed in what Frank Jackson has been doing for us well. And you know, there's this kind of delicate situation. He didn't play any single minute for Asvel in the last game that the French team had in the French derby against Monaco. And talking about Monaco, also we have to mention Kemba Walker. Is kind of a slow start for him, but he has been dealing with some injuries, with some minor injuries. So we're not seeing in the best shape version of Kemba at the moment. So we have to wait and see about that. But of course, he can. He has a lot of concurrency in that backcourt with Mike James, of course, one of the MVP candidates, Jordan Lloyd, Elio Kobo. So it's a difficult topic for that.
I have to say that I definitely agree with your pick about Jabari Parker, also because of the performances he had against Panathinaikos and Cervenas Vesta, mostly against Cervenas Vesta, because that was the most difficult game of the 20. He had the 20 points plus the 5 rebounds, but mostly because of the implications that these performances have and the expectations that they create. He made it look so effortless. so smooth, letting the game come to him. He didn't force anything. He was taking advantage of the systems. He was reading its play, taking advantage of the mismatches. Calm, you know, usually NBA players that come to Europe, even after 7 or 10 games, they sometimes, you know, they want to prove things to themselves and to fans and to spectators, because there's the criticism, oh, this player came to EuroLeague, so there must be something wrong to him, which is definitely not the case. So they want to prove themselves, they want to score, they want to produce, they want to make a statement. They also want to help their teams win, of course, but they also want to make things happen on the floor. Jabari took things very smoothly, very calmly. And for sure. Right now, because of the way he's having these really good games, we can't really predict how high his ceiling might be in EuroLeague basketball, considering that he will likely play better and better the more and more he adjusts to the game. Anyway, this is another win for Roger Grimau, because honestly, we are talking about a rookie coach in the EuroLeague, and Barcelona seems to be playing better than last year. They are getting wins. And we now have a player who had never been, who had never played basketball outside the USA. He came to Europe and he seems to adjust well so quickly.
Yes.
Like Jabari. So if Jabari continues playing like that, and as I said, it's very likely that he can play much, much better than that. Truly, the sky is the limit, considering how well he plays. I don't know, he can take Barcelona's game to another level. So
yeah.
What grade, if I ask you to put a grade on his game, what would you, how
probably,
would you grade him?
Probably out of 10, I think that Jabari right now is a solid 8, to be honest.
Solid because, 8, yeah, I agree, yeah. I agree, 8. Let's not overreact, put
yeah,
9s
yeah.
or something like that, but yeah,
exactly.
a great solid 8, I agree. Let's talk about his teammate, Willy Hernangómez.
I think that Willy, you know, it's a different thing. It's a different conversation for Willy because, of course, he's used to FIBA game and stuff like that. I will put him slightly behind Jabari, but he's still a 7.5 in my eyes.
Yeah. Willy also had, he didn't have his best game, but he tied his season high in EuroLeague.
Yes.
In the game against the Venezuela, they had 18 points. Now, Willie, this is the funny thing with Willie. He doesn't even average 70 minutes per game. He averages slightly fewer minutes than that. He 16.50 seconds, but he's among the most high. I was looking at it doing a research for the MVP ladder. He's maybe the player with the highest usage in EuroLeague. It sounds crazy, but that's how it is. There are some websites that that provide a bit of a different information on exactly his usage number, but they all agree that he has a very high usage. When he's on the floor...
Yeah. And also, yeah, sorry for interrupting you, but also he has the competition of whole new generated Yanbezeli. So that's also important to state.
And Oscar Da Silva, who
yep.
doesn't play the center position exactly. He plays also as a 4, but Da Silva is another player who appears to be much better this season. But every time Hernangómez is on the floor, the command from the bench is clear. Give him the ball. Let him do his thing. Yeah, I would give him a 7, Willy. Now, when it comes to his brother, things aren't that positive. Of course, Juancho is out for the rest of the year. For the rest of the year, I mean, for the rest of 2023, not the season.
Not the season.
To be clear, because he has a fractured finger, so he's out now.
I heard that. I heard that. We have a similar situation.
Yeah, unfortunately. Now, Juancho, it wasn't easy for him to adjust in the EuroLeague. He had his best game in the opener, actually, against Olympiacos, 13 points, 10 rebounds. He has 10 points and 6 rebounds against Bayern, and then almost nothing, at least when it comes to the offensive end, because he's putting an effort on defense. 0 points against Fener, 1 against Maccabi, 3 against Baskonia, 0 against Barcelona, probably his worst overall performance in the season, considering that in this game he wasn't even adequate on the defensive end. So yeah. Juanjo has problems adjusting it right now. There's his injury also to consider, but I would put him at 4 perhaps. I don't know if you agree.
Probably a little bit better, because, like, you know, something like 4.5 or 5, because it's surely not sufficient, like what he's providing. But we also have to consider the, you know, the kind of debate over the position he's playing and whether Ergin Ataman sees him as a 4, as a 3. There's a kind of controversial things occurring at the moment with Panathinaikos. And I think that the injury comes in the worst timing possible, because, you know, there's no moment to adjust. And when Juancho comes back, he has to deliver straight away. And that's kind of an issue.
I think that Ergin Ataman knows what Juancho's position is. And he more or less has admitted, while criticizing the player after the game against Barcelona, without naming him, but come on, everyone knew that he was talking about Juancho Hernan Gomez to local reporters. He knows that he's not putting Juancho in the position that the player feels comfortable when he's using him as a small forward. It's a kind of position that Juancho has to adapt in. And he has, in general, a lot of things to adapt to, but that doesn't mean that he plays according to his quality. He wasn't shooting the ball well, and he had problems finding himself in good positions to deliver in the system of Panathinaikos. Now, Serge Ibaka, he also has begun to performing a bit better and better recently.
Yes.
Bayern is still 2-5, of course. That's a problem. The thing with Serge Ibaka is that he's leading the league in blocks. He even blocks more shots than Eddie Tavares, which is kind of impressive, with 1.5. Now, in the last two games, he had 10 points against Cervena Zvezda, 16 points against Maccabi Tel Aviv on perfect shooting, his best performance so far this season. But Bayer is not winning.
I think that Serge can bring that kind of, you know, veteran experience along the way for Bayern, and possibly making things going better for Pablo Lasso's team. In my eyes right now, he can get a solid 6.5/7, because, you know, he's not that efficient as Jabari with the winning side in Barcelona. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of surprising to see him in this kind of shape at the moment, you know, being such a veteran with long years in his legs. I'm pretty happy about how he started, and I would like Bayern to get back on track some way, somehow, because I think this team has potential to make good stuff happening in the EuroLeague.
Well, they are hosting Partizan Belgrade in the next game Wednesday. Really, a really unpredictable battle. I can't, because Partizan hasn't been exactly convincing so far. Okay, they beat Fenerbahce, but then they lost to Igokea in the ABBA League. They have their first set of ups and downs. You can't say that they are strong, full stop. They have problems. They have a quality roster. They have Bruno Caboclo now joining them, but we can't really bet on them, despite the fact that they have a solid roster. They are missing Kevin Pander, of course. Speaking of Partizan, now, give me your grade about Serge.
I think, yeah, as I said, I think it's a solid 6.5/7, something like that.
Yeah, 6.5, you told me. Frank Kaminski, you said that you put him behind Jabari Parker in a way.
Yeah,
I would say that it's easier for a big man to adjust in European basketball, in a completely different situation in general, than, of course, any guard. And by guard, we haven't even touched the guards yet, like Kemba Walker, for example. Now, Frank Kaminski, it took him some time to adjust in several situations, and in some rules as well. For example, he even told me after the game against Olympiakos that he wasn't aware that the technical foul could it would count as a personal foul.
Yeah.
And it counted as a fifth foul, and that got him out of the game in a moment when his team was without big men, essentially. And that was a big problem. But he also has been playing better and better, and he had a really good game. His season high in EuroLeague against Fenerbahce, 15 points. He scored crucial baskets in the last period.
Yes. Like Frank, as I said, in my eyes, is probably the one alongside Jabari Parker who has the better ceiling along the way in this season in the EuroLeague. Because, as I said, also with a different kind of partner potentially coming off the bench like Caboclo, he can provide kind of uniqueness for Partizan under the basket. I see Caboclo in a, like, it's difficult to compare him, but I think Caboclo is way more similar to Lesort than Kaminsky is at the moment. Kaminsky is a type of Smailagic, but, you know, a better version of Smailagic, if we can say that. So I do believe that Frank is providing some important stuff for Jelico, and he has the trust of the team. And yeah, I like what he's bringing. And I think he has been way more efficient than PJ Dozier, who's you know, in kind of a so-and-so situation at the moment. He can be way better in my eyes.
Will you give Frank a 7?
Probably even a 7.5, yeah.
Really? I feel that you're a bit generous with...
I'm pretty confident. I don't know. Yeah, I have something.
Okay. Now, regarding PJ Dozier, now this is a player who is having his first set of ups and downs as well. He hasn't played really well over the last couple of games for Partizan. He wasn't good at Baskonia. He wasn't good against... actually, against Baskonia, it was his only scoreless game in EuroLeague. He played just 9 minutes. Zeljko Bradovic wasn't really happy about him. And against Fenerbahce, he had 2 out of 6 shots. He had 5 assists in this game, and it will be important for him to, at least in days that the shots don't fall in, and maybe it will take him time to adjust when it comes to scoring. It might be easier for him to embrace more of a facilitator role before he successfully adjusts to Zeljko Bradovic's systems as a scorer. So, PJ Dozier, I believe it's a 4. And I think maybe...
A 4? No, well. I wasn't thinking about the 4. Man, come on.
Four is 3.
No. I think that we can be more generous to PJ. No?
Okay, let's give him a 5.
Yeah, I think a 5 is... Yeah, it's okay, yeah.
Okay. Speaking about guards, we have Kemba. The curious case of Kemba Walker. And why I'm saying the curious case of Kemba Walker, because we know, it's obvious that Kemba Walker isn't 100% ready yet. Yeah, he plays. He has played in 4 games so far out of 7. He started around 3. And by the way, his first game was a win. The first win for Monaco.
Yes.
And he had... he scored 10 points against Maccabi. That was a blowout win, of course, for Monaco. But then against Asvel, he spent 6 minutes on the floor. He played fewer minutes than any other game. He took just 1 shot. I don't know if we can really grade Kemba at this moment.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's difficult to judge, because we have seen even, like, not even, I think, in total. I'm not exactly sure, but I don't think we saw like 30 minutes in total of what Kemba Walker has been playing for Monaco. Like, he has been coming off the bench, but he missed the game against Milan on the road. You know, he debuted against Zvezda. So I think it's difficult to judge at the moment. What I've seen is only a slightly part of what Kemba Walker can bring to this team, especially coming off the bench. He can lead the second unit, and he can be a way better leader in that sense. Like, at the moment, he's just a good player overall, but is, you know, way ahead of potentially what Kemba can be in the EuroLeague. He can potentially with the type of player he has been along the years in the NBA, he can dominate the competition. And right now, we're surely not seeing a dominator.
I'm really unsure how Kemba will find the necessary minutes and the time and the responsibilities and role on the team now with Jordan Lloyd back. Because honestly, this backcourt, I'm talking about Mike James, Eli Okobo, and Jordan Lloyd, is already stacked. And I think it's already stacked enough, maybe.
Yeah, like
so, I don't know how Kemba fits the team, to be honest. I don't know what he has to offer to this team. I think that this is a team that when it reaches its full potential, and when I'm talking about full potential, I'm not talking about the guards. The guards are doing work already, and Jordan Lloyd is a quality player. He will. It's like the injury that he had. He needed some time to return to action. It won't take much time for him to fully unleash his talent once again. So the kind of player he's already doing that, by the way. I mean, reaching the higher standards that we're used to from him before. When the big man of the Monaco is the kind of a problem we talked about in previous podcasts.
Yes.
When the big men also become more consistent contributors, I think that's what Monaco is right now. I don't see how they need, another. I don't think that they really need another guard to necessarily provide something. I think that they have guards enough. I don't see how Kemba is going to help Monaco. I don't see what kind of assistance he could provide. Yeah. What kind of difference he can make for Monaco.
And also it's difficult to judge because at the end of the day you can naturally like you kind of compare him naturally to Mike James, and of course you shouldn't do that, but as a viewer, as a fan, you're kind of used to that thing, you know. You kind of compare the level of the second unit playmaker to the level of the first unit playmaker, and of course we're talking about the MVP candidate, and it's difficult to judge at the moment with Kemba.
I think we are done for this this edition of the Hero Pod ahead of the double game week. It's going to be a big one. Let's talk about the games of round 8. At least we have Monaco against Efes, Maccabi against Olympiacos, Virtus against Milano. We talked a lot about this, the Italian derby, Valencia against Real Madrid, Cervena, Zvezda hosting Fenerbahce, and then on Wednesday, Alba Berlin against ASVEL. Well, at least one of those teams is going to reach the two wins in the EuroLeague. Panathinaikos against Žalgiris Kaunas, Baskonia against Barcelona, and Bayern Munich against Partizan. Cesare, I leave out the Italian derby, so pick one game, one game out of all the rest that it's a don't miss, has a don't miss stamp on it.
I'm really interested in one of the two Spanish derbies, Valencia against Real Madrid, because we're talking about two of the best teams in terms of defense in the whole EuroLeague. But Valencia has been struggling a lot on offense. So, you know, it will be interesting to see how Valencia faces the unbeaten team. In my eyes, of course, Real Madrid is the favorite, but I wouldn't count out a surprise potentially.
Real Madrid, by the way, that doesn't that also has a very strong defense according to the defensive rating that also counts how many points a team allows per possession, and according to the pace they play, Real Madrid has the top defense in EuroLeague. So we have basically two strong defenses, and I'd like to see if Real Madrid manages to impose this kind of fast-paced game against Valencia, a team that likes to slow down the tempo a bit and plays really tough basketball. Yeah, I agree with you. Valencia against Real Madrid and Baskonia against Barcelona are two must-watch games. That's a wrap, Cesare, I believe, for this EuroHoopPod. It was quite the discussion, and I hope our viewers enjoyed that we gave them a good appetizer ahead of the double game EuroLeague week. So, this is farewell until our next EuroHoopPod, hopefully with a guest. this time.
We'll try to.
Take care, Cesare. Take care, Cesare.
Thank you.
And happy rehabilitate. I hope you rehabilitate quickly. And
thank you.
I wish you a good recovery, first and foremost. And to our viewers, you can check us out on YouTube, Spotify, and other channels. And of course, check all the news, articles, trademarks, stories on EuroLeague and European basketball, etc. at eurohoops.net. Farewell, everyone.
See you soon.